20 years ago, I was in the final stages of finishing my first book. It was a history of Mountjoy Prison, and it involved researching some of the lives of its tens of thousands of prisoners over the years. The story of one prisoner has stayed with me above all others. He was Frank Dubida, a member of one of the most respected Dublin French Huguenot families, whose motto was sans tache, without stain, and who was first brought to my attention by Maria Wooten, who published a booklet about him. Dubida's story begins in Killiney, County Dublin. At the time, he was married to Rosa Waterhouse, who'd brought with her a healthy dowry, and they had three children. Frank had made a fortune from the flotation of the Guinness Brewery on the London Stock Exchange in 1886. In 1889, he inherited one of the city's largest stockbroking firms on his father's death, and the following year was elected president of the Dublin Stock Exchange. At the centre of Dublin's social scene, he had a lavish lifestyle, was known to his friends as the Baron, and seems to have been literally larger than life. He was reputedly 24 stone. His house in Killiney would have 37 rooms, a sitting room the size of the lounge at the Shelburne Hotel, and a tennis court outside, and was to be named, with more than a little vanity, Frankfurt. Even as he was being elected president of the exchange, poor investments, profligate spending, and money poured into his trophy house were leading him to run up huge debts. To cover his losses, and perhaps hoping to buy some time for the market to get better, he began embezzling his clients' funds. But it all caught up with him, and on December 18th, 1890, he fled Ireland, leaving behind an estimated £100,000 of unpaid debts. The following July, he was arrested in South Africa and returned to Ireland, was tried, convicted, and sentenced to 7 years penal servitude. Had that been the end of his story, he might have faded from my mind. But this was only the start. Shortly after his committal to Mountjoy, Dubida either contrived to slip or accidentally slipped, and either pretended to injure himself or actually injured himself, depending on whether you believe his or the prison officials' accounts. It was never definitively decided what happened, but it resulted in years of confinement in the relative comfort of the prison hospital, though also undergoing gruesome force feeding and exploratory procedures. The authorities privately admitted that if he'd been an ordinary prisoner, he would have been released. But given his social status, that would have led to allegations of favouritism. Meanwhile, his wife Rosa campaigned tirelessly for his release, despite many of her relatives having lost money through his schemes, including her unforgiving father. She herself had watched her life's possessions publicly auctioned to pay Frank's creditors. In November 1896, Frank was eventually let out of prison into Rosa's care. With his weight down to just 9 stone, he was almost unrecognisable. But whatever sympathy I might have had for him evaporated when I read that no sooner had Rosa secured his release than he told her he was leaving her. The marriage was over. When his health was restored, suspiciously quickly, Frank left Ireland and met and fell in love with an extravagant actress, Rosita Martinez. He returned to South Africa and later found himself in the Mozambique town of Lourenco Marques, today known as Maputo, on Delagoa Bay. There he met a Portuguese man, Emilio Durure, who offered him a share in a government concession or contract to build a pier that was connected directly by train to the huge goldfields near Johannesburg. It was a fantastic opportunity. Frank planned to make plenty of money and, perhaps reflecting his rising fortunes, his physique returned to its previous proportions. Frank, with Rosita, returned to Dublin to sell shares in the concession, apparently determined to make amends to people he had previously defrauded. It was during this time that his wife Rosa died, many said of a broken heart. The day after her death, Frank and Rosita married. Then, out of the blue, in 1903, Frank was arrested in the Central Hotel in Dublin. The police had been informed that the Delagoa Bay pier concession was a fraud. But this time, it appears that Frank was a victim, having been swindled by Emilio de Rure. History told against Frank, and he was tried, found guilty, and sentenced this time to 5 years imprisonment. Rosita was as loyal as Rosa had been, and she managed to secure evidence that proved Frank's innocence. After 12 months, and having again shed many stones in weight, Frank was released. But this time, he was a beaten man. He would make no effort to re-establish himself in finance. Rosita and Frank moved to Kometje, outside Cape Town in South Africa. He and Rosita had a son, William, named after Frank's father. But they don't appear to have lived happily ever after. According to neighbours, Rosita frequently drank to excess, sometimes becoming violent, while she also caroused at a nearby naval base. Frank, once the life and soul of the Dublin social scene, became a recluse, rarely leaving their three-room house. Frank reportedly dedicated most of his time to his son, protecting him from his wife's excesses, and was more of a father to William than he had been to his previous three children. And when I look at Frank's story, I often wonder if it was perhaps his own father's death that somehow sent him off the rails. And I wonder, did he, through his own son, find some inner peace, some meaning in the last years of his life? But this is pure conjecture, and I will never know the state of his mind or level of self-knowledge when, 100 years ago this summer, Frank Dubeda died almost penniless in Kometje, outside Cape Town, in South Africa.